Following the government's integrated review of 2020, which recommended a more streamlined and agile military force, medical provision within the British Army is currently being transformed. It is doing this by reorganising the medical services structure as well as repurposing existing medical units. As such, now is an opportune moment to look back as well as forward as the Army refocuses against a backdrop of conflict in Eastern Europe and counter-terrorism more widely. This new series of podcasts takes as its theme the role of the field hospital as a staple of the medical organisation of the British Army over the past 150 years. In this series so far, we have explored its formation as the Clearing Hospital, later renamed the Casualty Clearing Station in the First World War, which changed its name again in the 1970s to what we know now. The field hospitals are currently undergoing change again, being rebranded as multi-role medical regiments as they take on new capabilities and a more active role as a result of Future Soldier, the transformation program for a leaner and more agile army. One aspect of this change that we touched upon in the previous episode was the integration with the National Health Service. In the 1850s, following the Crimean War, a series of military hospitals were created, starting with the Royal Victoria Hospital at Netley in Hampshire. These were intended as permanent institutions for the receipt and treatment of casualties from overseas, and they were used for medical and healthcare training. But following the Second World War, there was a decreasing need for them, and by the 1990s, the last of them closed. At that time, the Defence Medical Services became integrated with the National Health Service, and this means that regular and reserve Army medical personnel work within the NHS, alongside their civilian counterparts, in order to keep their clinical skills and training current. We asked Lieutenant Colonel John Greener, commanding officer of Tutu Field Hospital, if he could describe the arrangement for us.
So our involvement with the NHS is as a location to put our clinical staff, our professionally qualified individuals, both officers and soldiers, into an environment where they can do their wartime day-to-day roles in a way that we can't do in barracks. So for example, a laboratory technician who needs to go away and do lab teching on a day-to-day basis will do that in an NHS environment, because in barracks we simply don't do that kind of thing. As an example, we've just set up a contract with a hospital in Blackburn where they'll take our clinical personnel on placements up there, local to the squadron in Preston, to again facilitate them doing their healthcare practice and keeping themselves clinically current so that when we are required to do the job on deployment, we can do that. It basically covers a gap that we can't provide in barracks.
We have featured regular and reserve personnel in this series from 22 Field Hospital and 203 Welsh Field Hospital, and we asked some of them about this aspect of their work. We began with Sergeant Faye Lewis and Staff Sergeant Ged Stanford, both of 22 Field Hospital.
The clinical work that I do in the NHS, we have to work within those four areas, the microbiology and the blood sciences, and to keep ourselves current, we have to do a week a month, which I would go down to Frimley Park Hospital. I've been doing my specialist portfolio in microbiology, so I would go into the microbiology lab and work exactly the same alongside the civilian lab staff, do exactly the same job as them. And that then gives me the sort of currency that I need to work as a microbiologist in field hospital.
Have you been doing this work within the NHS since you qualified in the Army?
So I did all my training in an NHS lab, exactly the same as a civilian trainee would. And then I was posted down to Frimley Park Hospital, and I was there for 2 years before I came here to 22 Field Hospital. So I've worked for 2 years. I did some blood transfusion. I was lucky enough to finish my master's off in the virology department over at St Peter's. So I've seen a couple of different labs, how they work. And then I go back to Frimley Park because I already know them. They already know me. And I can just fit back into those processes then.
So, well, there are two questions, basically, sort of flip side of each other. So the first one is, how does your role in the Army inform your work in the NHS? And conversely, how does your work in the NHS inform your role in the Army?
The work that I've done in the NHS has helped definitely with everything that I do in the Army, because everything has to be the same standard. It doesn't matter that you're at one table in the middle of the desert, or whether you're in a huge lab with loads of people around you. You have to work to that same standard. Everything has to be the same level so that patient gets a good level of care. Before I deployed recently, actually, I did some work with the PCR machine, which ended up being the one that we used for COVID testing. So to have done that, it gave me the real confidence that I just knew exactly how to use it because I'd used it loads beforehand. And even bringing back the things that I've learned from being deployed, a huge amount of what we do is cold chain stuff, which is keeping things to the right temperature. To bring that back into the NHS, it's beneficial for me because I know exactly what temperature things should be, which you can find out by looking, but if you already know it, it saves you that time, and I think that's benefited me a lot.
My name is Staff Sergeant Getty Scanford, and I'm the farm tech in Tutu Field Hospital.
So can I ask, what's your relationship with the National Health Service?
For me as a farm tech in Tutu Field Hospital, we do have some of our soldiers that work within the NHS that are part of our readiness, as in field hospital readiness. And I give them medicines management training when they come over for us to go on exercise. And that is the closest I have with SAS soldiers. When it comes to the NHS itself, as part of our role, I'm a registered General Pharmaceutical Council member, so I need to keep my competency and for revalidation reasons. I work with Frimley Park Hospital Pharmacy as part of my clinical placement. I've been given 20 days at least to be able to work within in the pharmacy. So as and when I get a chance, I liaise with them and then I go in and work in the pharmacy in Frimley Park.
That was Sergeant Faye Lewis and Staff Sergeant Ged Stanford, both talking about their personal experience of working within the structures of the National Health Service. Of course, by being embedded within the National Health Service, both regulars and reservists have work commitments, and these affect the readiness of the field hospital for deployment. We wondered how this affects the planning process and asked Captain Elliot Digby-Jones how this is managed.
In terms of our NHS integration then, our field hospital at readiness, we don't have all the specialist capability within our regiment at a moment's notice. We have to rely on pulling from the NHS itself. How that works is that we have a joint business agreement with the joint hospital group, so the tri-service sort of medical provision, and essentially, depending on what commitments we're required for and with our readiness commitment, we have to reach in to their workforce, their ops teams, and essentially work out who's available, which specialities are needed, and who we can pull on. And then it's a two-way sort of street with that. We help prepare them, and we make sure that they're good to go. If you know, something were to, the balloon to go up, as it were, we're there to provide them with that support, getting them out the door and making sure they're integrated. And that goes through just regular touch points or through various exercises throughout the sort of readiness period that we're on, really.
Can you describe for us a little bit about the link between the Army Medical Services and the National Health Service?
Yes, of course. So we do have quite a strong link between the Army Medical Service and National Health Service. What that looks like in terms of a direct link is how we work within a joint hospital group environment. So military personnel working in the NHS that are contracted by the Army, so our military personnel, but have an active contract within the NHS doing their normal day-to-day roles. For other healthcare professionals in that environment, that can look like training, or that can look like full-time employment as part of one of their postings. And then for us within a field hospital, it's a workforce that we can draw on for specialist capability as well. But within a joint business agreement, essentially, between the two organisations, so the field army and the joint tri-service, the three services environment, and that looks like a certain time frame. So, for example, a consultant doctor needs 108 days preparation time for them to be good to go to deploy with us if, you know, in a large-scale operation where the field hospital would be deployed. So we have some elements which are internal to us who are on a shorter notice of readiness, and then it's very reticent that we have a larger cohort of service personnel, particularly specialist clinicians, longer or a greater notice of readiness, and that's where these specialists come from. So yeah, that's how the relationship manifests itself.
Given that both regulars and reservists are embedded within the National Health Service, we were interested to know how life in the Army influences their day-to-day clinical roles and their perspectives on this. We asked Catherine Lang and Simon Lawrence at 203 Welsh Field Hospital if they could explain.
My current role within the NHS is as a burns and plastics registrar in training. I really, really find it difficult to say how 203 and being in the reserves has influenced my NHS practice and career, but I absolutely know it's had a huge impact. From a clinical point of view, so that means my day-to-day job doing plastics, I feel that, well, actually, the NHS does have more to offer because that's where I do my bread and butter training of everything from trauma, skin cancer, whatever. From a leadership point of view, the army has given me a huge amount of confidence and given me a completely different perspective as to what a leader is. Before joining the army, I absolutely did not see myself as having any power, is a weird word to use, but I absolutely did not see myself as having any power. I felt like I was a small cog, and within the NHS, you feel like you're just sort of sat on a treadmill. You're in the system, and you know it is what it is. When I commissioned from Sandhurst, I'd already been working for five years ish in the NHS, and I went into a reasonably new job as a junior registrar just before the pandemic started. And I don't think that could have been better timing in terms of having the army's training on leadership and what that means to them and their idea that everybody's a leader from the very bottom to the very top. You know, I will, instead of sat there being like, oh, woe is me, this isn't happening for me, I will say, okay, woe is me, I don't like this. What can I do to get myself out of the situation? Or what can I do? So, you know, I'm struggling to get enough cases in this. So it's like, well, actually, if I suggest this, suggest that, then, oh, brilliant. I'm so much happier now. And that's, I think it's made me more proactive, for sure. I don't want to say there are downsides, but I think I've found a peer group within the army that suit my personality as well. And I quite often get people say to me, oh, you know, civilians, oh, Kat, you're so army. And I'm like, I'm on time every day. That's not so army. That's just me. And a lot of my characteristics, people attribute to the army when it was actually me before. And I try to remember that not everybody has that military bearing. I don't think I have a particularly strong military bearing, but I guess it does make you slightly frustrated when people like wander into work 10 minutes late and you're sort of like, come on, we started work 10 minutes ago. And you'll get some people who are like, oh, you know, calm down. What's the big deal?
My name is Simon Lawrence. I'm Colonel Simon Lawrence. I'm the commanding officer of 203 Welsh Field Hospital. As it is at the moment, it's soon to become 203 Multi-Role Medical Regiment.
You work within the NHS. How would you describe it? How do you perceive that your work for the army influences what you do in the NHS and vice versa, perhaps?
I got told off when I came back from Iraq for ordering people to do things because I got used to ordering people to do things. And whereas in the NHS, you've had to ask them politely, even though I was outranked them. So that was a culture shock for me that I had to manage. But the advantages of being in the Army Reserve, I've found in my NHS practice, is I have a wider understanding of healthcare. I have a better understanding of trauma than the majority of people in my oncology centre, because they're oncology focused, so am I, but I also have a better understanding of healthcare and health in general, and the role that radiographers play and the role that other personnel play, because I've assisted and helped them, you know, because it's all hands to the pump when you're deployed and everyone does a bit of everything to get the job done. I have a better understanding of personnel management. I've seen different sorts of appraisal. I've seen different sorts of training and motivation and the different ways in which the army compared to the NHS looks after its staff, looks after in the Mary Poppins sense and the Al Pacino sense. And that helped me change my behaviours in my NHS job to better suit the environment it's in, because I've seen what the alternatives are. For some, the army is better. For some, the NHS is better. The NHS is the provider of healthcare and are the experts. The army is better at managing its people. And I think the NHS could learn some lessons from the army in that. Planning, because no plan survives first contact with the enemy. That's just as true in healthcare as it is in warfare. We are better planners, and we plan extensively and take into consideration all the various courses of action that we might take and the mitigations and the challenges that we're going to face, and factor those in so that we are prepared for them, which I don't think the NHS does as well, because they don't have to. And I think I'm a better radiographer because I've done x-rays and scans in the most austere of conditions, and therefore a nice, clean, warm, dry, dust-free hospital is a luxury, and I can do more or less anything with a mobile x-ray machine that some of my NHS colleagues would balk at because it's far too primitive for them. I don't blame them because that's what they're used to, but I've got used to a lot worse, and therefore I feel I'm a better radiographer. I've also had to learn to be more self-reliant, and we as healthcare professionals in the army are more self-reliant. We look after our own equipment much better than our NHS colleagues do, because our NHS colleagues don't need to. It's expeditious, and it's required in the army because of the expeditionary nature of our work and the austere environments we work in. So we've had to learn it, and we've had to do it, and we've had to do it well, because otherwise we lose the facility and the capability, which you can't afford to do either in the NHS or in the army. But in the army, it's just more difficult. Everything's just harder work.
Catherine Leng and Simon Lawrence there, describing their experiences and challenges as reservists working within the National Health Service. Even as the world becomes a more volatile and uncertain place, as the ongoing situation in Ukraine and the Middle East demonstrates, and with public discussion about Britain's ability to defend its interests at the forefront, the tried and tested organisation of the field hospital, in its new guise of a multi-role medical regiment, will remain a staple of the medical organisation and response of the British Army for Primary Care. What was introduced in the Boer War at the end of the 19th century remains fit for purpose to meet the challenges of the 21st century, and its people are committed to clinical excellence and the healing of wounded soldiers and civilians. We hope you've enjoyed these insights into the life and work of military medical personnel, and will join us for the next series.